A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's grounded in a real situation, which I always appreciate. He was reviewing a lease in Israel recently, spotted a bunch of clauses that set off alarm bells, and had a good lawyer confirm those instincts. But the thing that stuck with him is the gap. If you can afford a lawyer, great. If you can't, you're signing blind. And his question is whether AI can fill that gap. Specifically, are there apps that do jurisdiction, aware contract review? How do they get that local knowledge? And if you wanted to build your own system without a massive database of example contracts, could you do it with public domain legislation and whatever else is out there?
It's timely because this space has moved fast in the last 18 months. The short answer to, are there apps, is yes. There are several, and they're getting better. But the jurisdiction, awareness dimension is where most of them still fall over. And the build your own question is the really interesting one, because it forces you to think about what understanding a contract actually means for a machine.
Because on the surface, contract review seems like exactly the kind of thing AI should be good at. It's text, it's pattern matching, it's flagging deviations from norms. But the moment you add in Israel, or in Germany, or in California, the whole thing gets slippery.
It does. And let me ground this with some actual tools. The biggest player in consumer-facing AI contract review right now is probably Do Not Pay. They started as a parking ticket bot and expanded into all kinds of consumer legal tasks. They have a contract review feature where you upload a document and it flags problematic clauses. But it's largely US-focused, and even within the US, it's uneven across states. I've seen reviews where it flagged a standard California rent control disclosure as suspicious because it didn't match its training on Texas leases.
Which is exactly the nightmare scenario. The tool tells you something is problematic. You go in guns blazing with your landlord, and it turns out you're objecting to a clause that's not just standard, but legally required.
That's the false positive problem, and it's worse than a false negative in this context. If the AI misses something bad, you're in trouble, but you might not know it. If the AI flags something that's actually fine, you damage the relationship and look uninformed. In a tight rental market, and Israel's is extremely tight right now, especially in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, the landlord just moves on to the next applicant who won't make a fuss.
What else is out there beyond Do Not Pay?
There's LogX and Kira systems, but those are enterprise, sold to corporate legal departments, not individuals. On the more accessible side, there's a Canadian company called Beagle that does AI contract review for rental agreements, but again, North American. For Israel specifically, there's a startup called Lawflex doing AI-assisted contract review, but it's still lawyer in the loop, not pure self-serve. The honest answer is that a jurisdiction-specific consumer-grade AI contract reviewer for Israel doesn't really exist yet in a polished form.
Which brings us to the build your own part of the question. And I think this is where it gets genuinely interesting, because the constraint Daniel laid out is smart. No exhaustive bank of example contracts. Just legislation, public domain materials, and whatever you can scrape together.
Let me walk through what that system would actually look like. You'd essentially build a retrieval augmented generation pipeline, a RAG system, where instead of the AI relying solely on what it learned during training, it actively retrieves relevant legal text at query time and uses those to ground its analysis.
Break that down for me. When I upload my lease, what actually happens?
Step 1. The document gets parsed. You extract all the clauses, and this is harder than it sounds because leases aren't always well structured. Some are PDFs with weird formatting, some are scanned images, some are Word documents where the numbering scheme was designed by a chaotic neutral. But let's assume you get clean text extraction. Step 2. For each clause, the system runs a search against your knowledge base. Israeli rental law, tenant protection statutes, maybe case law if you have it, and retrieves the most relevant legal provisions. Step 3, the AI gets the clause and the retrieved legal context together and is asked, does this clause comply with the law, deviate from standard practice, or contain anything a tenant should be worried about?
The retrieval step is doing the heavy lifting on jurisdiction awareness.
The base model, something like Claude or GPT, has general legal reasoning capability, but it doesn't know the specifics of Israeli tenant law unless you feed it those specifics at query time. The retrieval system is what turns a generalist AI into something that can say, actually, under the Israeli Tenant Protection Law of 1972, as amended, this clause about maintenance responsibilities is unenforceable.
The 1972 law, that's still the framework.
It's been amended multiple times, but yes, the core tenant protection framework dates back to the 1970s, supplemented by more recent legislation on specific issues. There's the 2014 amendment on security deposits, which capped deposits at one-third of the first month's rent and required them to be held in an interest-bearing account. There are regulations about notice periods, about who pays for repairs, about what happens when the property is sold. A lot of it is surprisingly tenant-friendly on paper. The problem is enforcement and awareness.
The retrieval system needs to know about these specific statutes. Where do you actually get that data?
This is the public domain part of the question, and it's more feasible than people might think. Israel's Knesset database, the National Legislation Database, is publicly accessible and contains the full text of laws and amendments. It's in Hebrew, which adds complexity, but machine translation of legal Hebrew to English has gotten quite good. There's also the Israel Law Information System, which includes case law summaries. And organizations like the Israel Consumer Council have put out tenant rights guides in plain language.
You've got statutes, you've got some government guidance, you probably don't have a huge corpus of actual leases to learn what's standard, which was Daniel's constraint. How much does that limit you?
It limits you in a specific way. The statutes tell you what's legally permissible and what's not. They don't tell you what's customary. And in Israeli real estate, there's a huge gap between the law on the books and what actually happens in practice.
Give me an example.
Israeli law says the landlord is responsible for major repairs and maintenance of essential systems, plumbing, electrical, structural. But in practice, many Israeli leases include clauses that shift some of this burden to the tenant, and these clauses are often accepted because the market is so competitive that tenants don't push back. An AI that only knows the law would flag these clauses as problematic. A lawyer who practices in Israel would say, technically yes, but good luck getting a landlord to strike that clause in this market.
You'd get the false positive problem again, just from a different direction. The AI would be legally correct, but practically unhelpful.
Which is why the ideal system needs both the legal framework for hard boundaries and some awareness of market norms for practical advice. The market norms part is harder to get without a corpus of actual leases, but you could approximate it. You could scrape publicly posted rental listings on sites like Yad2 where landlords describe their terms, not the full contract, but a signal about what's common. You could mine Israeli court rulings in tenant disputes, which are public and often describe the lease terms that led to the dispute. And several large Israeli real estate agencies have template leases that are widely circulated.
None of those are a clean database of contracts, but together they give you a pretty good picture of what's normal.
They give you a fuzzy picture, and for a first pass review tool, fuzzy is actually fine. The goal isn't to replace a lawyer for complex situations, it's to catch the dangerous clauses that a non-expert might miss entirely.
What kind of clauses are we talking about? Daniel mentioned his lease had several that were immediately problematic.
A few common red flags in Israeli leases. 1. An open-ended maintenance clause that says the tenant is responsible for all repairs and maintenance without limitation. Under Israeli law, the landlord can't offload structural repairs, but if you sign that clause, you're in for a fight. 2. A clause that waives the landlord's obligation to provide notice before entering the property. Israeli law requires reasonable notice, usually 24 to 48 hours, and a blanket waiver signals a landlord who intends to ignore boundaries. 3. A clause that allows the landlord to increase rent mid-lease based on market conditions or at their discretion. Israeli lease law generally ties increases to the consumer price index or requires them to be specified in advance. An open-ended increase clause is a massive red flag.
The notice one interests me because it's the kind of thing a first-time renter might not even clock as problematic. Landlord may enter at any time. Some people would read that and think it's just how renting works.
In some jurisdictions, it actually is. In parts of the US, landlord entry rights are surprisingly broad. In Germany, tenant privacy protections are extremely strong. In Israel, it's somewhere in the middle, with a legal framework that's decent but inconsistently enforced. An AI that doesn't know which jurisdiction it's operating in is worse than useless. It's actively misleading.
Let's talk about the actual build. Walk me through the technical stack.
At a high level, you'd need four components. One, a document parser that can handle Hebrew language PDFs, Word documents, and ideally scan documents with OCR. Two, a vector database for semantic search, something like Pinecone or Weaviate, or even a local solution like ChromaDB, where you'd store embeddings of legal provisions and reference materials. Three, an embedding model that handles Hebrew well, which narrows the field. You'd probably want something like Hebert, or a multilingual model tested on Hebrew legal text. Four, a language model to do the actual analysis and generate the plain language explanation.
You'd run the retrieval step every time a user uploads a lease, matching each clause against the relevant legal context.
And this is where the design decisions get interesting. Do you chunk the lease by clause and retrieve context for each one individually? That's more precise, but slower. Do you retrieve for the whole document at once? Faster, but less nuanced. The sweet spot is probably a hybrid. Retrieve broadly for the whole document, then do targeted retrieval for specific clause types you've identified as high risk: maintenance, deposit, termination, entry rights.
You could build a classifier for that, another small model, or even keyword-based rules that identifies which clauses deal with which topics. It doesn't need to be perfect.
If you misclassify a maintenance clause as a termination clause, the retrieval step will still pull relevant legal text. It just might miss the most targeted provision.
What about the language barrier? Israeli leases are in Hebrew. The legislation is in Hebrew. But the person using the tool might want the output in English.
This is actually one of the places where AI shines. You can do the entire analysis pipeline in Hebrew, parsing, retrieval, clause classification, and then at the very end, ask the language model to generate the explanation in English. Better to keep the legal reasoning in the source language and translate only the output. Machine translation from Hebrew to English is quite good now, especially for formal legal language, which tends to be structured and avoids idiom.
Let's talk about cost. If someone wanted to build this for themselves or as a small project, what are we looking at?
For a personal use or small-scale system, surprisingly cheap. The vector database can run locally for free. The embedding model is a one-time compute cost. You embed your legal corpus once and store the vectors. The language model API calls are the ongoing cost, and for something like Claude or GPT, you're looking at maybe a few cents per lease review. You could probably build and run the whole thing for under $50 a month, assuming moderate usage.
That's dramatically less than a lawyer.
Orders of magnitude less. A lawyer in Israel for lease review might charge anywhere from 800 to 2,500 shekels, roughly 200 to 700 US dollars. The AI version is pennies. But it's not a substitute for a lawyer in all cases. It's a triage tool. It catches the obvious problems and tells you when you need to escalate to a human.
Which was Daniel's framing. Anything is better than no review at all.
I think that's exactly right. The question isn't, can AI match a good lawyer? The question is, can AI help someone who would otherwise sign a lease with no review whatsoever? And the answer to that is clearly yes.
There's something else here worth pulling on. The prompt mentions that some clauses don't mean what they seem to at face value. That's not just a translation problem. It's a cultural and legal convention problem.
In Israeli contracts, certain phrases sound alarming in English but are standard boilerplate. The tenant confirms that they have inspected the property and found it in good condition. That sounds like you're waiving all rights to complain about pre-existing damage. In practice, Israeli courts have held that this clause doesn't override the landlord's statutory obligations regarding habitability, but an AI without case law context would flag this as a dangerous waiver.
The inverse. Clauses that seem benign but are actually traps.
The tenant agrees to pay all taxes and levies associated with the property. That sounds administrative. In Israel, municipal property tax, arnona, is legally the tenant's responsibility, so that part is fine. But all taxes and levies could be interpreted to include betterment levies or capital gains taxes if the property is sold, which can be enormous. A properly drafted clause specifies Arnona and maybe building maintenance fees, not all taxes.
The AI needs not just legal knowledge, but a kind of linguistic suspicion. The ability to read a phrase and think, this is vague in a way that could be exploited.
That's a hard thing to systematize. But you can approximate it by building a taxonomy of problematic patterns. Clauses that are overly broad. Clauses that reference undefined terms. Clauses that cross-reference other documents that aren't attached. Clauses that use permissive language like the landlord may without corresponding limitations. These are red flags in any jurisdiction, and they're detectable without deep legal knowledge.
This is where the reasonableness, framing, and the prompt matters. Daniel didn't ask for a tool that gives definitive legal rulings. He asked for something that assesses reasonableness.
Reasonableness is a lower bar, which makes the AI problem more tractable. You don't need to be right about every edge case. You need to catch the things that a reasonable person, informed about local norms, would find concerning. That's a much more achievable goal.
Let's zoom out for a second. There's something broader here about the role of AI in access to justice. Contract review feels like one of the most promising applications, because the alternative for most people isn't hire a lawyer. It's sign and hope.
The access to justice dimension is real, and it's especially acute in rental markets. In Israel, something like 30% of the population rents. That's over 2.5 million people. The majority of them are signing leases without legal review. If even a fraction of those people could run their lease through an AI tool and catch one bad clause, the aggregate impact is enormous. A bad maintenance clause can mean living with broken plumbing. A bad termination clause can mean losing your deposit or being locked into a lease you need to break. For lower-income renters, these aren't inconveniences, they're financial emergencies.
There was a study out of the University of Haifa's law faculty that looked at tenant-landlord disputes in small claims court. They found that tenants won or partially won in something like 60% of cases where they had legal representation, versus about 25% when they didn't. The merits were often on the tenant's side. The law is reasonably protective, but without someone who could frame the argument in legal terms, they couldn't access that protection.
That's the other function of contract review AI that people don't talk about enough. It's not just about deciding whether to sign. It's about knowing your rights during the tenancy. If you know that the landlord can't legally enter without notice, you're empowered to say no when they try. If you know that the maintenance clause is unenforceable, you're empowered to demand repairs. The AI review is a one-time intervention that has ongoing effects.
Okay, so we've established that building this is feasible and worthwhile. Let's talk about the limitations honestly. What are the failure modes?
First, stale data. If your knowledge base isn't updated, you're giving advice based on repealed statutes. This is manageable if you're maintaining the system actively, but it's a real risk for a set-it-and-forget-it project. Second, gaps in your knowledge base. If there's a relevant Supreme Court ruling that isn't in your corpus, you might miss an important interpretation. Third, and this is the hardest one, the AI's tendency to sound confident even when it's wrong. You could get a very authoritative-sounding analysis that's completely incorrect about a nuanced point of law.
The hallucination problem.
Right, and in legal contexts, hallucinations are especially dangerous because the user has no way to verify. If the AI cites a section of law that doesn't exist, the non-lawyer user isn't going to know that. There are mitigation strategies. You can require the system to cite specific provisions and then verify that those provisions actually exist in your knowledge base. But it's not foolproof.
You'd want to build in some kind of confidence indicator. I'm fairly sure about this versus this is my best guess, but you should verify.
Some tools do this. They'll say things like high confidence or consult a lawyer. But even that is tricky because the AI isn't actually assessing its own uncertainty accurately. It's generating a confidence label based on patterns in its training data, not on genuine epistemic calibration. There's a whole literature on whether language models know what they don't know, and the short answer is, not reliably. They're better than they were 2 years ago, but they still confidently assert falsehoods with disturbing regularity.
The responsible design is to position the tool as a first-bar screener, not a definitive authority. Here are the clauses you should look at more carefully. Here's what the law says about them. Here's why this might be a concern. But this is not legal advice.
That disclaimer isn't just legal cover, it's important for the user's decision-making. You want them to take the output seriously, but not uncritically.
Let's go back to the build question. Daniel asked specifically about creating a system with public domain materials. Are there any public domain Israeli lease templates that could serve as a baseline for what standard?
There are a few. The Israel Bar Association has published model lease agreements in the past. Some municipalities, Tel Aviv for instance, have tenant resource centers that provide template leases or clause-by-clause guides. The Ministry of Housing has a standard contract for public housing that, while not directly applicable to private rentals, gives you a sense of what the government considers fair terms. And Israeli legal clinics at Tel Aviv University, Hebrew University, Haifa, have published tenant rights handbooks with annotated example clauses.
You could build a normal baseline from these public templates and then measure any uploaded lease against that baseline. Deviations get flagged.
That's the approach. And it's actually more robust than trying to learn norms from a corpus of private leases, because private leases reflect what landlords can get away with in a tight market, not necessarily what's fair or legally sound.
The public templates represent the normative standard. The private leases represent the actual market. And the gap between them is where the problems live.
That's a very clean way to put it. And it suggests that the AI's job isn't to enforce the normative standard. That would flag almost every real-world lease, but to highlight the gap and let the user decide what they're willing to accept.
Which requires a different kind of output. Not, this clause is bad, but this clause deviates from the standard template in the following ways, and here's what you'd be giving up.
That's a much more useful framing. It turns the AI from a judge into an informant. It's saying, I'm not going to tell you whether to sign, but you should know that the standard lease gives you 60 days notice before termination, and this one gives you 30. Whether that's a deal breaker is your call.
That's exactly the kind of thing a good lawyer does. They don't make the decision for you. They make sure you understand what you're deciding.
The best lawyers I've worked with, and I dealt with a fair number during my medical career, for practice agreements and leases, they all had that quality. They'd walk you through the document and say, this clause means X, and the typical clause says Y, and the difference is Z. Up to you whether Z matters.
We're not trying to replace the lawyer's judgment. We're trying to replicate the lawyer's ability to translate legalese into plain language and identify deviations from the norm. That's a much more bounded problem, and one that AI is good at, provided you've done the retrieval setup correctly. Summarization, comparison, plain language translation, these are core language model capabilities. The hard part isn't the analysis, it's the knowledge base. Let's talk about one more dimension, the user interface. If someone builds this, what should it actually look like?
The ideal interface, I think, is a side-by-side view. On the left, the original lease with problematic clauses highlighted. On the right, for each highlight, a plain language explanation of what the clause means, how it compares to standard practice, and what the legal framework says. Maybe a color code, red for likely unenforceable or highly unusual, yellow for worth negotiating, green for standard, and every claim should be traceable. This clause may violate Section 6A of the Tenant Protection Law. Click, and you see the actual statutory text. That transparency builds trust and also helps catch errors.
It also educates the user over time. After reviewing a few leases, they'd start to recognize the patterns themselves.
That's the long game. The tool isn't just a one-time assistant, it's a legal literacy builder. And legal literacy among renters is shockingly low, not just in Israel, but everywhere. A tool that explains why a clause matters, not just that it's bad, actually teaches people the underlying principles.
There's an irony here that I want to point out. We're talking about using AI to help people navigate a legal system that is itself too complex for most people to navigate unaided. The complexity creates the need for the tool. In an ideal world, you'd simplify the system rather than building tools to cope with it. But simplifying rental law is a multi-decade legislative project, and people need help now.
That's the pragmatic argument for these tools. They're not the optimal solution. The optimal solution is a legal system that doesn't require professional interpretation for basic transactions. But we don't live in that world, so you build the bridge.
The bridge is better than nothing. Which was the premise?
And I think we've established that the bridge is buildable. Not trivial, but buildable. The components exist. The public domain data exists, at least for Israel. The models are capable, the cost is low. What's missing is just the integration work. Someone needs to put the pieces together.
If someone listening wanted to actually do this, build a jurisdiction, a Ware Lease Reviewer for Israel or for their own jurisdiction, what's the first step?
Start with the knowledge base. Collect the statutes, the regulations, the key court rulings, the template leases, the tenant rights guides. Get them into clean, searchable text. That's the foundation everything else rests on, and it's the part that requires the most domain knowledge. You need someone who knows the legal landscape well enough to curate the right sources. After that, the technical pipeline is relatively straightforward. There are open source frameworks for RAG systems, and the APIs for embedding and generation are well documented.
The curation step is where you'd actually want a lawyer involved, at least for the initial setup, not to review individual leases, but to make sure your knowledge base is comprehensive and correctly weighted. A few hours of a lawyer's time to validate the source list and annotate a few example leases as ground truth for testing. That's a one-time cost, not a per-lease cost.
And the total would still be a fraction of what you'd spend on individual lease reviews. The economics are compelling. A few $100s in setup, a few cents per review, and you've got a tool that can serve hundreds or thousands of renters. And if you open sourced it, which, given that we're talking about public domain materials and off-the-shelf models, is entirely feasible. The marginal cost per additional user approaches zero.
There's a question I want to circle back to. We talked about the false positive problem, but what kinds of things would this system likely miss?
It would miss context-dependent unfairness. A rent increase clause pegged to the CPI might look standard, but if it also includes a floor. Rent increases by CPI or 3%, whichever is higher. That might slip past a system that's just checking for the presence of an indexation mechanism. It would miss clauses that are problematic in combination. A short notice period plus an automatic renewal clause creates a trap that neither clause individually signals. And it would miss things that are illegal, not because of what the lease says, but because of what it doesn't say. Omissions are much harder to flag than problematic inclusions.
Omissions are the hardest thing in any review process. You're looking for the dog that didn't bark.
If the lease doesn't mention the security deposit at all, doesn't specify how it's held, when it's returned, what deductions are permitted, that's a problem, but the AI might not flag it because there's no clause to analyze. You'd need a checklist-based approach alongside the clause analysis. The lease should address X, Y, and Z. It doesn't address X. That's a gap. The better commercial tools are heading in that direction. They have a taxonomy of expected clauses, and they check for presence, not just content.
Let's talk about one more build question. The prompt mentioned that the AI needs to understand what's reasonable in Israel specifically. We've talked about statutes and case law, but there's also a cultural dimension. Expectations around negotiation, around formality, around what's considered aggressive versus normal in tenant-landlord interactions. Can an AI capture that?
That's the hardest layer. In Israel, it's common and expected to negotiate lease terms. It's not a take-it-or-leave-it culture the way some markets are. In Germany, by contrast, the lease is often a standard form document and negotiation is less common. An AI that doesn't understand this might advise an Israeli renter to accept terms that are actually negotiable, or might advise a German renter to push back on terms that no landlord would change. You'd almost need a meta layer of cultural briefing. In this jurisdiction, the following items are commonly negotiated: rent, deposit terms, notice period. The following items are rarely negotiated: are no-no responsibility, building maintenance fees. Pick your battles.
That's exactly the kind of practical wisdom a good local lawyer provides. And it's the hardest thing to systematize because it's not written down anywhere. It's tacit knowledge, learned through experience, which means the AI version is always going to be missing something. The question is whether it's missing less than the alternative, which is no review at all.
On that metric, I think it clears the bar comfortably. Even a system that only catches statutory violations and major deviations from template language, without any cultural nuance, is enormously valuable to someone who would otherwise have nothing. The perfect is the enemy of the good, especially in legal tech, where the professional standard is so high that people sometimes dismiss tools that are merely useful rather than definitive.
All right, let's step back and put this in context. We're recording this in June of 2026. Where is AI-assisted legal review actually at right now?
It's in a transitional moment. The big corporate tools, the LogXs and Cures of the world, are mature and widely deployed. The consumer tools are still fragmented and jurisdiction limited. Do Not Pay has the most visibility, but the least depth. There are a dozen startups trying to crack the consumer legal AI market, but most are US-focused, and none have really solved the jurisdiction problem for smaller markets. What's changed in the last year is that the underlying models have gotten good enough that the bottleneck is no longer the AI's capability. It's the knowledge base and the product design.
We're at the point where the technology is ready, but the implementation hasn't caught up.
That's been the story of AI for the last couple of years generally. The models race ahead, and the applications take time to catch up. Legal tech moves slower than most domains because the stakes are high and the domain knowledge requirements are steep. And the regulatory environment is cautious. Bar associations in most jurisdictions have been clear that AI tools can't practice law without a license.
Which is why all these tools position themselves as information services, not legal advice. And it's one of the reasons the build-your-own approach is appealing. If you're building a tool for yourself or a small community, you're not selling legal services, you're just automating your own due diligence.
That's how a lot of useful legal tech starts. The first version of Do Not Pay was a chatbot that a 19-year-old built to fight his own parking tickets. A lot of the most interesting tools come from people scratching their own itch.
If Daniel, or anyone listening, wanted to scratch this particular itch, the path is, curate the legal sources, build the retrieval pipeline, design a simple interface, and test it on a bunch of real leases with lawyer validation to calibrate your confidence. It's a weekend project to get a prototype, and maybe a month of evenings to get something useful.
That's about right. And the nice thing is that once you've built it for Israel, adapting it to another jurisdiction is mostly a matter of swapping the knowledge base. The pipeline stays the same. The second jurisdiction is much faster than the first. There's a world where this becomes a template that tenant rights organizations in different countries adapt and maintain. Each one curates their local legal sources, plugs them into the same open source pipeline, and suddenly you've got jurisdiction-aware lease review in a dozen countries.
That's a exciting vision, and it's the kind of thing that's only possible because the AI layer is now a commodity. 2 years ago, you'd need custom models and a team of ML engineers. Now you need a curated PDF folder and an API key.
The democratization is real. It's not evenly distributed yet. You still need technical skills to set it up, but the barrier is lower than it's ever been, and it'll keep dropping.
The last thing I want to touch on. The prompt mentions that Daniel has respect for good lawyers, and I think that's an important framing. This isn't about replacing lawyers. It's about extending some of what lawyers do to people who can't access them.
The best framing I've heard is AI as a force multiplier for legal literacy. A lawyer can review 100 leases a year. A well-built AI tool can review 100,000. The lawyer is still essential for the hard cases, the negotiations, the litigation. But a lot of basic lease review is pattern recognition, and pattern recognition is what these models do. And the lawyer's time is freed up for the work that actually requires judgment and advocacy, which is what most lawyers would rather be doing anyway.
To answer the question directly, yes, there are apps, but none that do jurisdiction. Where is really lease review well enough to recommend without caveats? The build-your-own approach is feasible. The public domain materials exist, and the technical pipeline is well understood. The main constraint isn't technology, it's curation and testing.
If you're going to build it, start with the knowledge base. Everything else follows from that.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The word mycelium traces back through scientific Latin to the Greek myx, meaning fungus. But its earliest documented usage as a standalone English term appears in an 1836 botanical treatise. Meanwhile, the Cape Verde Islands, despite their volcanic aridity, host at least 23 endemic species of macrofungi, first systematically cataloged in the 1980s by a Portuguese mycologist who described their underground networks as the archipelago's hidden internet.
The archipelago's hidden internet. That's oddly beautiful. This has been My Weird Prompts, produced by Hilbert Flumingtop. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com or search for us on Spotify. If you found this useful, leave us a review. It helps.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.